the international settlements in Antarctica, at the South Pole, exist in conditions that are extremely harsh, but not impossible to overcome. The planet Mars would be one of many frontiers available to humankind in the space age. It's possible that, using technology, some humans may someday choose to become Martian. For June the 5th, that's Stardate. Our show is written by Deborah Bird and produced for the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, zip 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Certainly are.
Complete with telephones and all sorts of things. Throw that thing away.
Why? It's such a nice thing to have hanging around.
That's true, but throw it away anyway.
No, I refuse.
All right, don't throw it away then. Thank you, and this is the voice of Long Island, coming to you live over the FM airwaves.
And the telephone, as well.
And everything else you can think of. Microwave, shortwave, longwave, middlewave, you name it. And we have it. That's Mike Uhas in there playing with the telephone.
Oh, it's so much fun.
I'm Eric Corley in here trying to act serious.
Oh, it's still ringing. I hung up, though.
It's a strange phone.
No, I hung up the other one is what I meant.
Oh, okay. 6 minutes after 12 o'clock right now, and in case you didn't hear, this is the voice of Long Island.
And Frank Berger can tell you where we're at.
Where are we?
WUSB, Stony Brook.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you very much.
Isn't he swell?
Yeah, he's always good to say something like that.
Such a neat man.
Well, this is the fourth day. Am I correct? No, this is the fifth day of June now.
It certainly is.
1982. Mike, how was your week?
Oh, not bad.
Yeah? Not bad? You want to define what not bad means? Does that mean another boring, typical week for you, or what?
Well, actually not. Sunday was really neat. Sunday we had the Arts and Crafts Festival down in Port Jeff, and you weren't even there.
I was down in Asbury Park. Why don't you tell me about the Arts and Crafts Fair, because I haven't even heard about it that much. We were on the air. We were broadcasting live from the streets of Port Jefferson.
We certainly were. We were down there for hours and hours, and we met a whole bunch of neat people. We broadcast bunch of singers and musicians and violinists and all sorts of neat things. We had just such a swell time.
Any chocolate chip cookies this year?
I had one, but I didn't eat it on the air.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who was doing the broadcast along with you?
Oh, let's see. A whole bunch of people were down there. It was anchored by Walton Deirdre.
Yeah.
And Who else was down there?
David Jersey of Curtain Up fame.
Of Curtain Up fame, yes.
Walt Squetch of Sunday Afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Who else was there? David Badman was there.
David Goodman, yes.
Mm-hmm. Steve Specht was there. In fact, he's here right now.
How about that?
He's leaning over my shoulder, in fact. Who else was down there at the Arts
We're
and
so
Crafts?
Close here at the
in
radio
fact,
station.
In fact, Steve is even wearing an Arts and Crafts Festival T-shirt.
Is that so?
Yeah. Why don't you go over the window so Eric can see?
And I didn't get one, you know, and I didn't get an Asbury Park T-shirt either, I'll have you know. Yeah, I see it. It's a nice one.
Yeah, it is a nice one.
I'd like to get one of those.
Yeah. $250 he spent on it.
Well, my spirit was in it, even though I was many miles away.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun, too. It was the first time in my life I ever went to Asbury Park, and it was... Well, you could tell this was a town that once had prospered, and once had people were having a lot of fun at the carnival and hotels and arcades. But I'll tell you one thing about it. You walk down the boardwalk, and it's sort of like being in a Flintstones cartoon, because every 4 or 5 feet or so, the scene repeats exactly. You see an arcade,
a hot dog stand.
What else is on a place like that? You just see the exact in the exact same order.
Laundromats.
No laundromats, not on the boardwalk, but... there was another area, a couple of friends of mine said, hey, you want to go explore a haunted mansion? I said, sure, that sounds like fun. I'm into haunted mansions. I like haunted mansions. So we take a car and we go a few miles down the road, and I'm looking all over the place looking for this big, huge, abandoned, dark building, haunted mansion. I want to explore it and see cobwebs and mice and rats and fish and all those kind of things. So then we come up to this very crowded area, and I see off in the distance this huge building with an even huger sign up on top of it that says Haunted Mansion. It turns out to be some sort of an arcade, and I was very disappointed in that. It cost $2.50 to get in. No, $2.75 to get in.
Where was this?
This was in Asbury Park.
Oh, it was in Asbury Park.
I didn't even go in. I was so upset.
I went to a haunted house in Long Branch, New Jersey, about a year or so ago. In fact, I remember even talking about it on the air. It was closed because we were there the weekend before it opened.
Now, that's America. The only place I know where haunted houses can be closed. You know?
Right.
It sort of defies belief. But that's that. Asbury Park was a lot of fun. I, of course, didn't go down there just to look at that stuff. I went down there to see one of my favorite bands, The Clash.
Yes.
Oh, they were a lot of fun, let me tell you. They really were. The first night was it was kind of marred by, well...
A couple of incidents,
some Clash fans are not exactly what you would call the most intelligent people in the world. I say some. I don't mean all, because Clash fans, they are all over the globe, all different types of people. You like them for all different kinds of reasons. But these Clash fans were the punky kids who like to throw things. And somebody got a kick out of throwing M-80s up on stage, which wasn't too cool, and the Clash said as much, and they cut the show short. But the next night, I also saw them. They were much better. And
no M-80s that time, right?
No. We at USB did manage to speak to the manager of the band, Cosmo Vinyl, and we will be presenting that interview in a couple of weeks. We want to thank him for his cooperation and courteousness and all that stuff.
Courteousness?
Something like that.
Is that a new word?
Yeah, I just invented it.
Very good.
So it was a really fun weekend. It's too bad I couldn't make it down for the Arts and Crafts Festival, but I was very happy in Asbury Park.
It really is too bad. A lot of people couldn't make it for the Arts and Crafts Festival. John Vernile couldn't make it.
Why not? Even our own
station manager, Norm Pruslin, couldn't even make it.
Well, he had to go to a wedding. Now, that's a good excuse.
Yeah, well, that wasn't his wedding.
No.
So it's not a good enough excuse.
That's true. You know what else I did this week for the first time?
What?
You know, because you're the one who dragged me into it.
Oh, yeah. You went on a boat.
Yes. Well, I've been on a boat before, but this was a very special boat.
Oh, yeah, the Port Jeff Bridgeport Ferry.
That's right.
Yeah.
The first time ever. And do you know how long I've lived in this area?
And you've never ridden
since
on that?
Since 1968, and I've always been meaning to go on that Port Jefferson Ferry.
And boy, did I have to convince... I really had to twist his arm, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you see, I had a really busy night planned. I had a couple of...
Yeah, you were going to be on TV, but the studio burned down, so you couldn't go.
No, that wasn't exactly the story
there.
Well,
it was close enough.
Little cable TV program, and they just sort of rewired the studio that day, but... they tell me I'll be on sometime in the future. It doesn't really upset me that much. But no, I had a quiet evening planned, reading some manuals and looking at a couple of signs.
I guess that's better than reading automatics.
Driving in circles in the parking lot, that kind of thing. You know, a typical Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Or whatever night it was.
That's true. But it was an interesting boat ride. We even brought Frank Burgert along.
We did, and that made it very interesting.
Yeah, because we left him sitting and watching all the jackets and stuff while while we walked around flirting with all the girls.
The whole trick was we didn't get off the boat when we went over to Bridgeport, because if we had done that, we would have had to pay another $2.50 to get back on.
That's right, or something like that.
Yeah, so we didn't.
They only hit you up when you get out. They don't.
Right. So if you stay on, you can stay on the boat all day long.
Conceivably, and I'm sure people do.
That would be great.
There's everything you need on that boat. They have a gift shop. They don't have a mailbox, so if you buy a postcard, you have to take it off yourself.
That's right. They have a bathroom for both types of people, for
both genders, right?
Yeah,
and they have a snack bar and plus a game room. Actually, two game rooms.
No pinball machines, but electronic.
They used
games.
To have pinball machines, and they were so much fun because
especially on a
windy day, you know, the boat would be rocking all over the place, and there was no control in it whatsoever.
Was there a tilt though?
They'd really tilt if you really did a number on them, but they weren't as sensitive as your typical pinball.
What if you really hit a good wave, though? I mean, that's not too much fair.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I've been on ferries before.
Oh?
I don't think there was anything really unusual about that ferry, but the ride was interesting because you could see all these landmarks that you're familiar with, the Health Science Center. We could even see our transmitter halfway out to the Long Island Sound. Which made us wonder about what it's like in the wintertime when we string up the Christmas lights. You know, how far out can you see those? Maybe you can see them in Connecticut. Who knows?
Could be on a clear night.
You could see St. Charles Hospital all the way in Bridgeport. That was quite a sight.
That's true.
We saw the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a sight that was.
We really were astounded. In fact, we made the captain stop the boat, and just so we could stare at it for a little while.
We did. And we saw birds in the sky and airplanes and
Sikorsky Airport over in Bridgeport. I'd like to say a special hello to everybody in Bridgeport. Hello, everybody in Bridgeport.
Hi, Bridgeport. But we didn't see that. How could we see an airport from a boat?
Well, we didn't.
We saw planes going down, and we just assumed they were going to an airport.
Wait a minute. I saw hangars there, so.
You saw hangars?
But there were no closets. That's what Frank said. That's Frank's little line.
Frank, thank you, Frank, wherever you are. Yeah. Thank you.
But I did see hangars.
Well, we saw trains, too, which is unusual, taking a boat.
We saw a bunch of, a couple of Amtraks and a couple of,
Well, that's because
New
the
Haven
folks
lines.
In Bridgeport know how to do things right. They put their trains right next to the boat so people sitting on the boat can see the trains go by.
That's true.
No, not in Port Jefferson. Yeah. Oh, no, it's got to be all the way up on top of a hill somewhere. They have to make up a new town called Port Jefferson Station.
The station there, yeah.
Yeah, you don't have a Bridgeport station, do you? No, I think that's very considerate so that the people who are sitting on the boat waiting to go back can have something to watch. And I had a lot of fun watching trains go by. I saw two, what do you call those kind of trains again?
Which, the Amtrak?
Bud trains or something?
Oh, the Bud cars?
Bud cars.
Oh, well, you saw the one Bud car.
Well, one Bud car, I saw it twice.
Yeah, it runs up to Waterbury.
Now, why don't you explain what a Bud car is, in case people don't know what we're talking about?
Well, it's a self-propelled rail car
One car.
Yeah, it has. They can hook them up in multiple, you know.
Oh, really?
These are fairly old. Those guys are pretty old,
too. Technology is marvelous.
Yeah, that's like 20, 30-year-old technology you're talking about there, too.
And that's one little car that goes from Bridgeport to Waterbury.
Yeah.
And shuttles people back and forth from there.
Yeah.
And then the big, huge train comes from New York to Boston and stops at Bridgeport.
No, actually, New York to New Haven.
Oh.
That's one of the New Haven line commuters. Up to New Haven. Yeah, but the Bud cars are really kind of neat. I once rode on one from Philadelphia to Reading, Pennsylvania. They were fun because it had a digital speedometer on it.
Digital speedometer?
Yeah.
Why did you see the speedometer?
Well, I stood up in the front
and
looked out the front window, you know, over the engineer's shoulder, as it were.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was really neat. We were going like in excess of 70 miles an hour.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, when
you
get on a train, well, at least when I get on a train, I always wonder, should I sit in the front car, in the back car, in the middle car? That kind of a train, you don't have to worry because it's all the same car. It's like going on a bus or something.
That's basically what it feels like because there's a big diesel engine underneath and it sounds just like a bus when you're riding in one.
Do you pull a little string that goes ding when you want to get off or what?
You could. I
always liked that on buses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ding.
I always used to make them go ding even when I didn't want to get off, just to hear them go ding. And I used to try to get people on the other side to pull them at the exact same moment to see if there were two separate dings on each side of the bus or if there was just one centralized one.
But what was the
And I found that something on a campus bus that's really interesting. There's a ding and there's also a buzzer.
Ooh.
Yeah, you only get the buzzer, though, if you press the button when you're about to get off the middle door.
I see.
But enough talk about buses and trains and ferries.
There is more talk about trains there. We did see a bunch of New Haven Line commuter trains go by, plus the two Amtraks, one going to New York or Washington probably,
yeah,
and the other one towards Boston.
Well, if the two New York-New Haven ones weren't Amtraks, what were they?
They're Conrail, New Haven Line.
Uh-huh.
With a big M as in MTA on the side.
As there. In Long Island Railroad Electric Line.
Yeah, kind of like that. They're similar cars, but the Amtraks had these big Swedish locomotives on them. Yeah.
Now, they're the ones that are fed from electric lines up above.
Yeah,
is that right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's true, yeah.
Now I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was my week anyway. I had lots of fun doing all these crazy different things.
That's a really kind of fun ride, and I'd highly recommend it to anybody who can afford the $5 for the round trip.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an
advertisement, Mike. Oh. Hey, I'm going to have to indict you on that one.
Yeah.
Man. I'm a witness now. And Dave Goodman in there, he's a witness. Barry Reagan, Frank Berger down the hall, everyone's a witness. What do they call that? Is that payola or plugola or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
All right, we'll find the exact terms, and then we'll hit you up for it in the court.
Yeah. Say, listen, you're going to interview a guy on the phone in about 5 minutes.
Yeah,
right?
We have an interview with somebody who's going to be talking to us about what's going to be happening in New York City on Saturday, June 12th.
Mm.
Yeah, there's going to be a big demonstration, and I hear close to 1 million people are going to be there.
Wow.
that's going to be something. We're going to be broadcasting it live. Right here on USB.
What, the whole big thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's a Saturday?
That's a Saturday.
What time does this start?
I'm not exactly sure what time we'll be broadcasting it, but stay tuned for more details.
What is that going to do to Lister?
Well, we'll find out. We'll all find out. Just stay tuned, and we'll give you details as they come in. And then June 14th, of course, that's a Monday, there'll be a civil disobedience, I believe a sit-in in front of various embassies, United States, Soviet Union, China, France, and England, all the countries that produce nuclear weapons, I believe.
Uh-huh.
So we'll be talking to a gentleman who's helping to run all that, and he'll be telling us just what's going to be happening. That'll be in a few minutes. We also have... I guess a new episode of The Tripods. Has that come in yet?
I think they just got it in receiving about 5 minutes ago, in fact.
Receiving's still up, huh?
Yeah, okay, well, hey, good. Just for us, you know. Also, you tried... Well, we have our own kind of... What is it? It's, I guess, our own little Pepsi challenge.
Well, we have a soft drink scandal that we are working on
we're
right now.
We're uncovering it, right. And we're gonna present the prologue.
Part of it will be revealed tonight.
Is that the correct word, the prologue? I guess
yeah.
The foreword, as it were. And next week we'll wrap it up.
Well, next week we'll really dive into the juicy parts.
We certainly will.
This week will be just sort of, you'll be looking through the curtain a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but you won't really see what's happening until next week.
Some very interesting phone calls, so you might want to stay tuned for that.
This is at least a two-part series, but it may go a lot further than that. It's going to be quite a scandal, let me tell you.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Quite a scandal. We may also be calling for other delis.
Yes.
I guess somebody wanted to call Tanzania?
Tanzania?
Whatever.
Tanganyika?
Something like that.
And Dar es Salaam?
Yeah.
Mm. How do you spell that, anyway?
Dar es Salaam? Oh, that's very easy. Dar-es-salem.
Uh-huh.
Dar es Salaam.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm.
Yeah, that's
one
of my favorite places.
Anyway, I'm Mike Juhas, and you're...
Eric Corley.
And we're going to be here for the next a little more than two and a half hours.
It looks that way, unless something happens. Our phone number, what's our phone number?
516-246-7901. Do you have that little thing around?
No, I think you do.
Oh, is it this blank one here?
I think so, yeah. Well, this is what you might get if you call this number, but don't worry.
It's this blank card, right?
I think so.
The one that's completely blank.
All right, let's get back.
No, that's not it. Well, we'll figure all this out later.
Wait a minute. What it might be possibly this one here.
Watch out. No, that's not it. That's the telephone.
Okay, I don't have it then. Oh, let's try this one. This one. Is it this big long one?
I don't know. No, it's not a long one.
Hmm.
Let's just go into some music and you can try to find what you're doing later.
Yeah, give us a call anyway, 246-7901,
area code 516.
me sorrow, and I'm sad as a man can be. I sit alone in the darkness of my lonely room, and this room is a prison to me. I look out my window, and what do I see? I see a bird way up in a tree. I wanna be free.
Oh yes,
free.
Oh yes,
free. I wanna be free, like a bird in a tree.
Wanna be free.
Oh, what good are my eyes? They can't see you. And my arms, they can't hold you so tight. I have two lips that are yearning, but they turn no good to me. 'Cause I know I can't kiss you tonight. I look out my way, and what do I see? I see a bird way up in a tree. I wanna be free.
Oh yes,
free.
Oh yes,
free. I wanna be free, like a bird in a tree.
Robert Gordon on the Voice of Long Island from Fresh Fish Special, I Wanna Be Free. And we heard from the specials before that, Enjoy Yourself. It's Later Than You Think, a different version of that song that appears on the end of the album. It's 27 minutes after 12 o'clock, and with me now on the phone is Dave McReynolds, who is a staff person from the War Resisters League. Is that correct, Dave?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, now, we're here to ask you a couple of questions as to just what's going to be happening on Saturday, June 12th in New York City. Now, there's going to be a very large nuclear arms race demonstration and march. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, we'll find out what happens on June 12th, but the police estimates are that there will be between 200 and even possibly a 500,000 people coming into the city. That would be the largest demonstration for disarmament, in, as far as I know, in American history. And it's because of the United Nations Special Session on Disarmament, which is starting on June 7th, starts on Monday, and will run for 4 weeks here.
Now, what exactly is that session? Has something like that ever taken place before in the United Nations?
There was a special session 4 years ago, and at that time there was a demonstration of 25,000 at the UN, which I had helped organize, and I wasn't that good an organizer, because it's clear that someone else has done a much better job now 4 years later. We have 500,000 people coming in, or 250,000, whatever we get, is going to be much larger than when we began planning in January. We thought in terms of possibly getting 100,000 people here on June 12th. We never expected the response that we have seen.
So it seems as if the United States is finally catching up to all the Western European countries that have been having hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating in the streets against nuclear.
The demonstrations are demanding, if you look at the slogans, that both the Soviet and American governments move. It's not directed against this government, but against the arms race, against the policies of Reagan or Brezhnev or any country that has nuclear weapons. So it's a real demand for universal action by all major nuclear powers.
Now, on June 14th, there's going to be a civil disobedience action. Now, do you have information on that?
Yes. I was part of a three-person delegation that met today with the Chinese ambassador at their mission on the on explaining to them what would be happening. We had a group that met a day, or I think yesterday, with the Soviet mission to explain to them. The French, the British, and the Americans have not yet responded to the invitation to explain, but there will be people sitting down and blocking the entrances of all five major nuclear powers, symbolically protesting the failure of those governments to move in cutting their arms and making the demand that they unilaterally, each one of them, make major cuts and move toward unilateral nuclear disarmament. That's a project coordinated by the War Resisters League, and widely sponsored. I don't have a list in front of me, so I don't want to risk losing someone or leaving someone out. I think over 1,000 people will take part in those protests, and very possibly a good many more.
Now, those people had to go through a special non-violence training course, is that correct?
That's right. Information on where to get information on the training course could be had by calling 228-0450 in Manhattan. That's area code 212-228-0450. And someone can tell you where to get the information on that. But it is absolutely nonviolent. The effort is not to harass or intimidate or clash with the diplomats or the police. It's to make an expression of conscience and to accept the arrests that we think will occur in a peaceful and non-provocative way.
Have you been involved in a demonstration of that sort before?
Oh, yes. I was arrested and, in fact, helped organize the largest of the anti-draft demonstrations during the Vietnam War when Ben Spock got arrested and a number of others, and have taken part in other blockades and sit-downs at the White House and Pentagon, along with hundreds of thousands of people who did that kind of thing during the 1960s.
Now, these people who will be demonstrating on June 14th will have a choice of five countries, England, France, China, Soviet Union, and the United States. Now, how do you expect that to flow? What percentage do you expect to have for the United States?
There won't be that many at the French or the British or the Chinese, although there will be a significant number at the French because of protests about their testing in the Pacific. The Pacific Islanders are coming in and are very upset about the French nuclear test in the Pacific. I think that the largest will be at the Soviet and the American, and there's no question the largest will be at the American embassy or mission, and partly because of the outrageous effort by the State Department to deny visas to a number of people, 500 of our friends in Japan. They backed down, but not until trying to invoke the McCarran Act, and the anger about this effort to prevent people from coming to attend a special session of the United Nations, I think is exceptional on the part of people concerned with civil liberties.
David, this is Barry Reagan. I've been covering the disarmament movement for USB for several months now. And you mentioned before that this session is expected to draw many more people than both into the streets than the first one 4 years ago, and even more than you had expected just a few months ago when you started organizing. Do you have any explanation? What do you attribute that to?
There are two things I would attribute it to. The first is the simple fact that Reagan has been unusually provocative in his foreign policy statements and has frightened Europe and caused demonstrations there and made Americans concerned. The second reason is that I think that there's good sense out there throughout America that they have rallied around the freeze issue, which is fair. It calls on both the Americans and the Russians to stop. And I think that they caught us off guard by the grassroots support. I think many of those people, who in fact support something much stronger than the freeze, I think they really want to move toward disarmament. And I think that issue really would be the other reason. It was fair, it wasn't anti-American, it wasn't anti-Soviet, it was a position for humanity. And I think that was one of the tactical reasons for the success.
What groups are lending their support for this, for both the demonstration and the civil disobedience?
Well, on the June 12th demonstration, there is support from absolutely the entire spectrum. If you want to attack it for being, I don't mean that you do, but if someone wanted to attack it, they could point to the fact that the Socialist Party and the Communist Party have endorsed it. A number of Roman Catholic groups, a number of Protestant, a number of Jewish groups have endorsed it. But the key forces that have organized it, the major forces, and those I know about because I've worked on it and with it from its inception, would be out of the pacifist community, the War Resisters League, Fellowship of Reconciliation, and then out of Anti-American Defense Service Committee and Riverside Disarmament Program and other groups. I'm not trying to leave people out. And some groups that we don't fully agree with. The U.S. Peace Council have been involved with that work from the beginning. But that's where the base came from in terms of where the real energy came from.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to also know.
By the way, it just caught on. I mean, once we started, my God, everyone came out of the closet and wanted to work on this. Artists wanted to work, writers wanted to work, musicians wanted to perform. It's been incredible. The way of tapping, of letting energy loose.
Could you give me an idea of how things are going to work on Saturday? Where is it going to begin and where is it going to end?
It's going to start at the United Nations, and it's going to move up to Central Park, and there'll be speakers both at the UN and at Central Park.
How is it going to move up to Central Park?
I think very slowly.
But
I think people should get into Manhattan on June 12th to say they were there, in the same way that anyone who missed Woodstock, and I missed Woodstock, I didn't get out to Woodstock, but you know, any young person who wasn't at Woodstock regrets it. It was muddy and rainy, and no one ever got to hear the musicians, but they could stay at Woodstock. Anyone who can walk should get into Manhattan on June 12th, but I'll be very honest, I don't think they're going to move all those folks from the United Nations up Central Park. I think people are here to help have a massive outpouring of people into the streets of New York saying they want both the Soviet Union and the United States to stop and to disarm. They're tired of the arms race. The cities are starving. People are out of jobs. And there's a lot of anger in the black and the Puerto Rican community, and they're coming out to say they want that money used for human needs. And so I'm saying it doesn't really matter if they get up to Central Park to the speaker's tent.
Dave, are there...
In theory, they're going to go at Central Park.
Are there other actions planned for the 13th and also the 12th and the 14th besides?
On the 13th, there is a conference. There are a lot of things on the 13th. The one that hits me is the anti-draft conference, draft resistance conference. And again, anyone, any young man listening who's concerned about registration for the draft should phone area code 212-228-0450 and ask for information on the anti-draft and anti-registration conference on June 13th. There are other things happening on June 13th, but I don't have those in front of me. The main events, of course, are the 12th and the 14th.
All right. Should someone call that same number to get information on what events are taking place?
Yes, and they should. I don't have in front of me, unhappily. I should have, but I've left it at the office. The phone number for the mobilization, the reason I'm giving out the War Resistance League number is because it's what I have in my mind. But there are the June 12th rally committee, which number I don't have.
We have those numbers here, and we'll be giving them out later.
Terrific. Thanks very much. Thank you. You've got them.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't want to overload the WRL number. You know, the lines are clogging up in all offices now.
Might have to expand your facilities.
Yeah, well, we do. It's not a joke. You sit in an office and wait 10 minutes to make an important phone call, and then no one can get back to you. So I'm thank God you've got the other phone numbers there and can give them out.
Okay, I'd like to ask you a little bit about the War Resisters League, which is not one of the best-known groups in the world, although at this time I think it might be coming a little more into vogue than it has been. Over the past few years. If you could just give a little background on what the league is and what it does.
The league was organized in 1923 by men who came out of the prisons of the First World War. They refused to fight in that war. And organized by women who were in the Socialist Party and were suffragettes, militant feminists. And together those American radicals coming out of the secular tradition built a secular, which is a non-religious pacifist movement. And our people went to prison in World War II, and in the Korean War, and then in the Vietnam War. We have about 10,000 members. We will not serve in the armed forces of any country under any circumstances. We do not believe in the use of violence to change society. We don't believe in violent revolution. We don't believe in civil war. So our position is not very popular. As a matter of fact, it's a very hard position to take. We believe in the methods of Gandhi and of Martin Luther King Jr. Now, despite that, we've been very active in coalitions. We were the center of the coalition against the Vietnam War, and that was started in our offices in Lower Manhattan. The first coalition meetings came out of the WRL office. So our pacifism does not prevent us from supporting the right of people to wage a war of liberation. But we ourselves will not take part in violence, and are an organization that calls for the unilateral nuclear disarmament of America. We don't believe in the use of violence to defend things. We think we have got to explore the methods of Gandhi and of Martin Luther King Jr. See, I never understand my fellow Americans when they think it's terrific that blacks are nonviolent, but they think we need the nuclear bomb to deal with the Russians. I don't know what's so special about blacks that they can be nonviolent and the rest of us can't be.
Okay. That's a very good point, and one which I will think about, and I hope that we're taping this so that I'll be able to play it back at some other time. One thing that I would like to ask you, you talked about coalitions, how in the 60s WRL worked in coalitions. Now you're working in coalitions on the disarmament issue, particularly around June 12th, which, as you say, has attracted an incredible variety of sponsors, including the spectrum that I've been using. It consists of yourself and Mayor Koch, which I've been citing to show the variety of people who are behind the rally. I can't think of really more polar opposites.
We can't stop Mayor Koch from being behind the rally. You also cannot expect us to be very enthusiastic about a man who refers to the United Nations as a cesspool. And, it's a free country. He can come to the rally and shake hands. But as far as I know, he is not allowed the platform. It's not a rally that he organized. And if he's climbing onto it now, it's because it's so overwhelmingly popular that he's shifting ground.
Right.
Dick Koch was a great guy in the old days in Washington. He got arrested on the steps of the Congress during the Vietnam period. And he has a good background. Where he's gone since is very sad for a lot of us. But I would not say the demonstration reached Mayor Koch's position to ours, I think.
Yeah, right, he is getting in the newspaper, but the point that I was trying to bring out, or I was trying to ask you to comment on, is the state of the movement vis-a-vis what it was in the 60s, what the coalitions are, what direction the movement is going in, what speed is it moving at, how do you see that?
And it's not that easy to answer because for some of us who've been around, a number of the fights we're having now, we had then. And people who say we didn't deal with the issue of black liberation during the Vietnam period were not active in the movement. I don't know where they were, but if they had been active, they would know many of the same problems arose then. So it's hard to tell you what the differences are. One of the differences is that bodies are not coming home, and there's not the day-to-day urgency to this, and I'm afraid this can be a fad. People can have a rally, they can go home. I'm afraid that the administration will give us a freeze and quiet the movement. We ought to have disarmament. And in the case of the Vietnam War, you see, that movement could only be ending the war. In the case of this movement, you might quiet it by giving people a freeze. And then you still have the arms race. You still have the huge military spending.
Dave, we're running a bit short. Could you just tell folks who are interested, it's a week from today, actually, who are interested in coming down to the rally, to the march, what time the whole thing begins, for one thing, and just how crowded they can expect things to be?
I think if they can park their cars and take public transit into the island, that would be very sound. If they can take public transit altogether, trains or buses into the island, that's the best way to come. Within the island, I would get to the area of the United Nations around 1st Avenue and 42nd Street sometime around 10 a.m. I do not have the listings of where the various groups and tendencies are meeting, the women's groups and peace and political and gay and liberation. I don't have those, the black and Puerto Rican. But if you get there at 10 to 11 o'clock, you'll certainly be in time for to join that march as it leaves leaves the area of United Nations at 42nd and 1st Avenue.
And those interested in participating in the nonviolent civil disobedience.
Those must call the number. There's another number also, but I don't have that. But they should call area code 212-228-0450.
And that's the War Resisters League office.
And we'll put them in touch with the trainers.
All right, we'll be giving out the other numbers in a couple of minutes. So I want to thank you, Dave McReynolds, of the War Resisters League, for speaking with us and telling us about what's going to be happening. And we wish you luck.
Thanks very much for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, we'll have those numbers for you in just a couple of minutes on the Voice of Long Island. I hope Barry Reagan will get it for me. That would be very nice. 16 minutes to 1 o'clock. We have now, and oh, there's so many things we have to do. Will those numbers up there, Barry?
As a matter of fact, they are.
Hey, how about that? I might even have had them in front of me and not have known it.
You might have. Okay, the number for the June 14th civil disobedience campaign is area code 212-777-4737. Or you can also call on Long Island, area code 516-360-0045, and that's the phone number of the Shad Alliance. And David also mentioned Mobilization for Survival, which is another organization which is doing a lot of work on this activity, and their phone number in New York City is area code 212-673-1808. And those are the numbers. If you want them again, in case you were writing them down and you couldn't keep up, the Mobilization for Survival number, area code 212-673-1808. Long Island Shad Alliance is 360-0045. And the June 14th campaign is area code 212-777-4737.
And the War Resisters League, once again, area code 212-228-0450. If you have any questions about all that, or if you just want to get some more information, you can give us a call here at the radio station right now, and we'll be glad to tell you some more stuff. We'll also be broadcasting the thing live. That's a week from today, Saturday. That'll be on June 12th. And our phone number is area code 516-246-7901. So that's pretty much about all we can tell you about that now, I guess.
I have a little bit more information.
All right.
Tomorrow morning, or actually this morning at 10 o'clock, at the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant, there will be the beginning of the Long Island Walk for Survival, which is a 100-mile walk over the next 7 days, which will end up in New York City on June 11th, on the evening of June 11th, in time for the special session on disarmament, the June 12th. Rally, and the walk will kick off with a rally at the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant, and we'll be stopping in a number of communities across the island for the next 7 days. So if people want to take part in that, and additionally, although I'm not sure if there are any seats available, several trains on the Long Island Railroad have been chartered by the Long Island anti-nuclear movement. There's a $4 round trip, although, as I say, I'm not sure if any seats are available, but thousands of people will be on those trains going into New York City next Saturday.
And this is, of course, very important. This Monday evening at 8 p.m. right here in the Stony Brook Union Auditorium, USB will be presenting a panel discussion on nuclear armament, sanity, practicality, and morality. Now, this will feature a panel discussion by Dr. William Higginbotham, who is a senior scientist at Brookhaven Labs, Dr. Max Dresden of the Institute for Department here at Stony Brook, Father Bill Bruzzotti, and Alice Daly, chairperson of Long Island Nuclear Freeze Campaign. The whole thing will be moderated by our own David Goodman of WUSB. And there will be a chance for listeners. We will be broadcasting this live this Monday. There will be a chance for listeners to call in and ask questions to the panel. That's this Monday, 8 p.m., in the Union Auditorium and broadcast live on WUSB. And we will also be broadcasting lectures by Richard Garvin of IBM, Dr. Jonathan Lorch, Physicians for Social Responsibility, and Seymour Melman of Columbia University. So that's a town meeting on nuclear armament, once again taking place in the Stony Brook Union Auditorium, 8 p.m. this coming Monday, and broadcast live over USB. Well, it's 11 minutes to 1 o'clock. We're going to be going into some music, and then I understand we have a review of a late-breaking film, which will be in a couple of minutes. So stay right with the Voice of Long Island.
Down this road, dusty road, I'm a blowing down this old dusty road. I'm a blowing down this old dusty road, Lord, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way. I'm going where the water tastes like wine. I'm going where the water tastes like wine. I'm going where the water tastes like wine, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way. I'm going where the dust storms never blow. I'm going where them dust storms never blow. I'm going where them dust storms never blow, 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 and I ain't gonna be treated this way. They say I'm a dust bowl refugee. Yes, they say I'm a dust bowl refugee. They say I'm a dust bowl refugee, Lord, Lord, but I ain't gonna be treated this way. I'm looking for a job at honest pay. I'm looking for a job at honest pay. I'm looking for a job at honest pay, Lord, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way. My children need three square meals a day. Now my children need three square meals a day. My children need three square meals a day, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way. It takes a $10 shoe to fit my feet. It takes a $10 shoe to fit my feet. It takes a $10 shoe to fit my feet, Lord, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way. Your $2 shoe hurts my feet. Your $2 shoe hurts my feet. Yes, your $2 shoe hurts my feet, Lord, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way. I'm going down this old dusty road. I'm blowing down this old dusty road. I'm blowing down this old dusty road, Lord, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way.
Yeah, that's Woody Guthrie, the one and only Woody Guthrie, here on USB, and blowing down that old dusty road.
And the sound of squeaking doors in the background and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
We definitely have to get that oil doored. That door,
door oiled. Yeah. Or something like that, yeah. We have all sorts of technical repairs we're going to make here. It's 12:52, or 8 minutes to 1, if you like that way. 15 degrees Celsius in Stony Brook. Let's take a quick look at the USB Long Island weather. It should be cloudy tonight with that occasional light rain or drizzle continuing. Cool with lows in the upper 50s. Tomorrow we're expecting rainy, windy, cool conditions with rain heavy at times late in the day. Yeah.
Great beach day.
Oh, yeah. Highs in the... It is, you know. Highs
because
in the low 60s.
That's true, because you have the whole beach to yourself just about.
What's wrong with rain in, you know, anywhere?
That's
I like rain.
I'm sure you do.
You know, I remember this one time I went up to Vermont, way up to the top part of Vermont, the northwestern part, right next to Canada. It was great. It was about 5 miles away from Canada. And one day it just rained. And there's something about the rain when you're away from civilization, when you're in the middle of the country in this little log cabin, that is different from rain around here, or rain in the city, or rain in the suburbs. It just seems more serious and more intent.
Really?
Or is it
content?
Something like that. It just seems more like
more
rain.
Content, yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, rain as it should be. It continued all day. It didn't seem to ever stop once. And it was just, I called Vermont rain. I thought it was really nice. But in any event, Sunday's outlook calls for rain ending in the morning, partly cloudy, windy and cool in the afternoon with highs in the 60s. And currently it's 15 in Stony Brook. That's 59.
I have a feeling this summer is going to be really very, very short.
Well, do you mean rain-wise there'll be more rain?
I mean temperature-wise.
Well, that's a possibility.
We should be having 90 days already, 90-degree days already.
Well, I'm just as happy. I kind of like these crisp, cool days, you know, and I also like thunderstorms.
Yeah, I do too. But when was the last time we had a good thunderstorm? About a week and 2 weeks ago or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't a bad one. I remember the whole place was shaking around here.
That's true.
In fact, we almost got knocked off the air. That was fun.
Yeah. I remember it was a Thursday. I was up here and it started making the board squeal and all that.
Yeah.
Actually, these headphones I have are so bad it sounds like there's thunder in them. Really.
Is that so?
Yeah. Whenever I turn, it sounds like static. You know, it sounds like lightning bolts.
Well, that's not going over the air, so don't worry about it. We have some people with us now who have just seen a major motion picture. Is that correct?
Ooh, I think so, yeah.
The major motion picture is Star Trek. That's right, Star Trek, the movie sequel. And, here's Barry Reagan. He's just seen it, and I believe David Goodman has also just seen it.
Yeah, he's going to occupy this chair in here.
Okay.
All right, well, we'll switch.
All right, why don't you guys just switch right
okay.
now?
Okay, well, we'll just switch.
Dave can tell me what he thinks of the film, and these guys switch, being as quiet as they can. Are you there, Dave?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Eric.
How's it going?
Good.
So you saw the film tonight?
Yes, I saw a very good film tonight. And the entire title of this film is called Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. What that means is that it's based on one of the original Star Trek television episodes, whose title was called Space Seed, in which a character played by Ricardo Montalban plays a character called Khan, who is this superhuman type person, and he's genetically superior to most human beings. And in that episode, Space Seed, he was banished to a sort of a desolate kind of planet with his crew of superhumans. And in this movie, they come back and they sort of try and take over parts of the universe. And in comparison to the first Star Trek movie, it's much, much better. It's not as drawn out. And it does, in fact, play like one of the television episodes.
Uh-huh.
And I think Barry has a few comments. Barry?
Yes, Barry does have a few comments. What do you think of the film, Barry?
I thought it was excellent. Very, very well made. It was exactly what the first movie should have been and wasn't.
Why not?
You know, the first movie was overproduced, and as other people have commented, it was very boring. This movie was not boring. The characterization was basically the same as the television show. A little more depth to some of the characters, I would think, especially Mr. Spock. Uh-huh. Spock was fabulous. The new costumes are great. Love the colors. Nice kind of a burnt orange, almost a brown. Very nice colors. Excellent special effects. Very subdued special effects, too. The special effects were not the whole movie.
In fact, Barry, if I may interject, the producers of this movie spent about half as much money as they spent on the first movie, and they produced a much better product. it's funny, when I interviewed Gene Roddenberry earlier in the semester, school semester here, he did say that people would enjoy this movie much, much more, and I have to agree with him.
I think this one is going to be a big hit, probably one of the biggest hits of the summer. It's fabulous movie. The ending is great. They borrow freely from some of the classics of literature, including Moby Dick and The Tale of Two Cities, and they do it in a way that is very good. You know, it's not hidden. They're real right out front about where their sources are coming from, and it's this very, very well done, enjoyable movie that has probably the best ending I've seen in a movie in a long time.
Well, that certainly sounds interesting. That's for that one comment, I have to see it. You know, a good ending that makes a film.
Yeah, it's no secret. Leonard Nimoy insisted upon having a special clause in his contract, which called for his character to be killed at the end of the movie because he apparently is tired.
Okay, but I got a question here. Now, how many times in the Star Trek episodes did Captain Kirk get killed, quote-unquote?
It's not Kirk this time.
I know, but I'm just using him as an example.
I believe it was four.
Four times. Okay, four and times. Each time something happened. And, oh, boy, he's not really dead, or wow, we can suddenly revive him. Always, though, when it wasn't an important crewman, there was never a way of reviving the unimportant
crewman. Well, that happens in this time, too. Several extras just get zapped right out of existence without any second thoughts about it. Although Dave did have some comments, some of the things that he was disappointed in the movie about that had to do with that. Dave?
Well, yeah, during the movie I pointed out to Barry that, oh, there goes a couple more extras to be zapped. But, you know, that's all part of a dramatic presentation, whether it be a TV show or a movie. And I can accept those sort of things happening, especially in a movie like this, which is very enjoyable. And I just want to add that even if you weren't a diehard Star Trek fan while the TV show was being aired or reruns were being aired in the last 10 years, this is the kind of movie where you can go and have a good time. It's an adventure-filled flick, and I think people will definitely enjoy it.
Well, the point I was making before was with all the sudden revivals or bringing back to life of people who had been killed, isn't it possible that in the future, if Leonard Nimoy changes his mind, that they'll revive him somehow, or
yes,
pull a Sherlock Holmes,
yes,
where he didn't really die at all?
Exactly. If I may just describe the movie a little bit, there's a device which appears in the movie which has the ability to create life from lifelessness. And Mr. Spock's lifeless body is transported off the ship in a typical... in the Navy, you know how they dump the bodies off into the water. Well,
they don't dump the bodies, Dave. They bury them.
They bury the bodies.
There is a difference, yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, his
there's just something disconcerting about Spock being dumped.
Okay.
Yeah, that doesn't sit right with me either.
Okay. He was buried in space, but one of the parting shots of the movie is the Spock's casket appearing on this planet that has just been revived via this machine that can create life. So it's kind of ambiguous. The producers left it ambiguous whether or not Spock would come back in any form. I would tend to think that he'll come back in the form, a.k.a. Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars, where his spirit would appear.
Uh-huh.
And one thing to note, that Spock's death is not completely final, because at no point does Bones look at his body and say, Jim, this man is dead.
No, this Vulcan is dead.
He doesn't say that either.
Okay.
Yes, I waited continuously for McCoy to say, damn it, Jim, he's dead. He never did, though, and he had several opportunities.
He never once says, damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a physician.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. That's a goodie.
And as it turned out, Gene Roddenberry told me that he had asked the screenwriters to add lines like that, but apparently they felt that it was...
a bit silly.
Yes.
And there's no scenes of Kirk alone in the elevator saying, I'm losing command, I'm losing command.
Is that elevator still the same? Does it still go up and to the side?
It goes up and sideways, yes, but...
diagonally now, maybe?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't do that, but very few scenes in the elevator, very few scenes in the transporter room.
I like the elevator. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking for the emergency stop switch.
What I like the most about the elevator is there's no buttons to push. You just tell it where you want to go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's a multilingual elevator.
It's sort of like the elevator we have here in the Union. I mean, you have to push the buttons, but they don't do any good. You know, it's a similar concept.
So some of the other things to notice about the movie is the attention to detail, which was absent from the first movie. For example, one of the new characters in this movie is a Vulcan. And we'll get back to this a little later, but apparently a Vulcan woman who is being groomed to be the new commander of the Enterprise. And one scene where she's alone with Spock and they're talking about Kirk in Vulcan, which is neat. And
yeah,
they flash the little you know, translations.
Well,
subtitles.
Star Wars was, I think, the first film to really do that, to have really weird languages and subtitles and things.
Yeah, but this looks really good. Another several details that I noticed. One scene after somebody's been killed by a phaser, and they're walking past the spot. You can see the scar, the phaser scar in the bulkhead behind them, where the phaser has cut through the metal. Which, you know, is just little scenes like that add a lot to the believability of a movie like this, which is real important.
Now, how did Kirk manage to become a commander of the Enterprise once more?
He's of course has his desk job for Starfleet Command. He's been elevated to the position of admiral, and he's actually on a routine inspection of the Enterprise when a call comes in that there's an emergency at a far-out research base. And Spock convinces Kirk to take over the helm of the Enterprise, Eric.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually a touching scene where they vow friendship, eternal friendship for each other.
And, that's sort of in premonition of what's to come.
Yes, this is true.
They didn't do that in any of the other episodes, that's for sure.
Well, occasionally, yes, but not too often. You know about using the actual Vulcan language? I've been waiting for them to use the Vulcan language. There was an episode, This Side of Paradise, where a woman, Layla Kalami, asked Mr. Spock what his first name was, and he said, you wouldn't be able to pronounce it, you know, in my language. And now we actually get a taste of what the Vulcan language sounds like.
What does it sound like? Does it sound like anything we've ever heard before?
Well, we probably have it on a sound effects cart somewhere, but I wouldn't...
Well, one of the carts has malfunctioned, I think.
I wouldn't dare attempt a translation.
Well, would you say it sounds like a Romance language or a Far Eastern language or just like two sheep or something?
Yeah, yes, a far-out language. I don't know, Mike Juhas on a bad night. I don't know, I'm not sure.
Okay, now I know what you mean. Okay, very interesting. Thank you for this review. And we have something now that pertains to Star Trek that Barry has given us. Do you want to give us an intro to this, or should we just go right into it?
Right into it.
Okay.
My favorite show was Star Trek, which has three characters. Dr. McCoy, who's always saying, "I dare not kill." You know, that's all he always says. You know, you have Captain Kirk, and you have Mr. Spock of Vulcan, who mates once every 7 years. You know, every episode, Captain Kirk is having a physical convulsion of some kind. He's walking through the corridor. It's those goddamn beans, Bones. Do something, Bones. I dare not, Jim. I've already given him enough to make a mule fight. I dare not. What are you thinking, Mr. Spock? Just six more years and I get a piece of ass.
Thanks very much, Barry. Franklin A.J. It was off an album called Franklin A.J. Comedian. Yeah, something on Star Trek and Captain Kirk and all that kind of stuff. All right, well, we have 7 minutes after 1 o'clock, and have you seen the rain outside?
Where have you been, my blue-eyed friend? Where have you been, my darling young one? I've strayed on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's hard, 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 hard rains are gonna fall. What did you see, my blue-eyed son? What did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn babe with the wild wolves around it. I saw a highway of golden with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with a blood that kept dripping. Saw a room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. Saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. Saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's hard, 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 hard. It's a hard rain that's gonna fall. What did you hear, my blue-eyed son? What did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the roar of a thunder, it roared out a warning. Heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. Heard 100 drummers whose hands were blazing. Heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. Heard the song of a poet that died in the gutter. Heard the sound of a clown that cried in the alley. Heard the sound of one person who cried he was human. And it's hard, 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 hard. It's a hard rain that's gonna fall. Who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? Who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man, he was wounded in love. I met another man, he was wounded in hatred. And it's hard, 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 hard. It's a hard rain that's gonna fall. Well, what do you do now, my blue-eyed son? What'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm going back out before the rain starts a-falling. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty. Where the pellets of poison are flooding my waters. Where the home in the valley meets the dark, dirty prison. Where the executioner's face is always well hidden. Where hunger is ugly, where souls are forgotten. Where black is the color, where none is the number. And I'll see it and tell it and think it and breathe it. And reflect from the mountains so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking. But I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's hard, 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 hard. It's a hard rain that's gonna fall.
serious subject, necrophilia.
That's right. Some of you kids are going to grow up to become necrophiles on one side of the fence or another. So here are some handy tips.
First off, there are lots of benefits. You don't have to be a brilliant conversationalist, and bad breath is never a handicap.
And your taste in clothing will not be criticized, but there are some drawbacks, too.
Folks might give you funny looks if you bring your girlfriend along to a party. And necro conventions can be awfully dull.
And the only way you can pick someone up at a bar is directly after a major disaster.
Now, it's not a good idea to advertise the fact that you're a necrophile, because some people may not understand.
Yeah, that's why we can't tell you about the guys at the station here.
But no matter what, kids, just remember that even necrophiles
don't play with blasting caps.
Hey, Arlo Guthrie, Which Side, from...
Outlast in the Blues. With Shenandoah. That's just a fine album. You know, he's got so much good stuff. He's just so overlooked, I think, you know?
I think so.
Yeah. I should just go out and do an interview with him sometime.
Why don't you?
Maybe I will.
Yeah, call him up right now.
Yeah.
Maybe that's him calling you.
It could be, too.
Hey.
Yeah.
She's out there somewhere, you know? Well, it's 19 minutes after 1 o'clock, and this is The Voice of Long Island.
I'm Mike Uhas.
I'm Eric Corley, and I believe we have The Scandal all ready to go.
Well, no, we have part one of The Scandal. Let me explain.
We're
not going deeply in depth. That's what I've been doing the last hour, 2 hours or so. I've been editing this thing. So when you listen to this thing, you'll hear telephone numbers turn backwards, persons' names turn backwards and stuff like that, just, you know, to protect these people.
Okay.
I've been doing that. We're not getting deeply into the scandal. We're going to save that for next week.
We're not going to give you very many details other than what we're going to play now.
Right.
But let us just tell you right now, this is a biggie.
It certainly is. And you're hearing it here on The Voice
of Long Island. This is a transcontinental scandal that we are... The phones are lighting up already. This is something that will affect the lives of people all over the world when we get finished with it.
Yeah. So why don't we just
sit back, enjoy.
Good afternoon, and thank you for calling. So can I help you?
Yes, hi. Is this the general office?
What is that?
I'm trying to find out the public relations office, or just the main office.
The main office? Okay, hold on.
Okay.
Yeah, what? Okay, the number is...
Yeah.
Now what?
What area code is that?
404.
404.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, is this the public relations office?
Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from New York.
New York?
Yes.
And you're reaching Baltimore, Maryland?
I dialed an 800 number.
Yes, I don't think anyone here could help you, sir. Get a number closer to New York. Just ask your operator for something closer to New York.
Do they have an office in New York City? Hello? Hello.
Johnson, what's
wrong? Manhattan, I'm looking for a number for the Pepsi-Cola company. Okay.
The Pepsi-Cola bottling company said they don't have a number for Manhattan. They have the number listed in Long Island City, like Brooklyn, the Bronx.
Okay.
Which one is?
The one in Long Island City.
Okay, the general office number.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much.
Pepsi-Cola.
Hi, Pepsi-Cola. I'm trying to find out which office is responsible for doing the conversions from ounces to milliliters. Could you help me find that office?
What?
I'm trying to find the office that makes the conversion on bottles and cans from ounces to milliliters and liters.
Well, you'd have to call the executive office for that.
Okay, where is that?
That's in Purchase, New York, but they go home at 12 o'clock on Fridays.
Oh, they do. What's their number?
Erico 914.
Uh-huh.
Here, Valbush. Correct.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
PepsiCo, this is a recording. PepsiCo World Headquarters is on a summer schedule, closing every Friday at 12:45. We will reopen Monday at 8:30 a.m. In case of an emergency, please call. Thank you.
Well, I say this is an emergency.
You have dialed a non-working number at PepsiCo.
further assistance, please dial the PepsiCo switchboard. Thank you.
Hi, I need to know who's responsible for making conversions on cans and bottles from ounces to milliliters.
Gee, sir, I'm only the receptionist, that I couldn't tell you.
Would you be able to give me a number to call or something?
No, I don't know who would, you don't have a name? You've never spoken with anybody before?
No, I'm just trying to find out what office would handle that.
Packaging?
Could be. Well, is there a labeling department?
No, there's packaging and development.
Okay, that would help.
Okay, I'm trying to think of a name I can give you in packaging and development. Okay, let me explain the situation. The office closes at 12:45 on Friday.
Yeah, so I heard.
Okay, so there's nobody here that can help you at this time.
Well, tell me something. Is there another office similar to this one in some other part of the country that might be open?
I don't think so.
Or is this the main headquarters?
This is the headquarter office.
Of the whole world?
Yes.
Okay.
Headquarters right here.
Yeah.
So somebody here would be able to answer your question. I'm just not sure of... Because it's there's been so many, changes since I've been here. I'm trying to think of who I could give you that would... Well, let me give you the name of somebody who would be able to refer you to somebody else.
Okay.
Okay? All right. First of all, explain me what this is in reference to.
Well, I just have a question regarding the method that is used to convert certain certain bottles and cans.
Okay, let me give you a guy's name in commercial development or packaging. His name is Jim.
Okay.
Okay, let me give you his extension. He's over on Westchester Avenue. Wait one second. But I know he's not there. He's left. And that's no weird. Nope.
That's no weird.
Exactly.
Okay, what time will they be in again?
Wait a second, he's not there anymore.
Oh.
Right, you know what? No, because he just moved over. You're going to have to call our main number.
Yeah.
Okay, and tell him that you're looking for this man, Jim. And he's at 3 Gannett Drive. You don't know the number over there because I don't know what it is. Let me see if I have it here. No, I do not have it.
3 Gannett Drive?
Right. But and they'll give you the phone number there to reach him. I know he just moved 2 weeks ago over to our new location.
I see.
So this number that I have in front of me is an old number.
What is his position?
I believe he's commercial development packaging. He could direct you to the right person.
Okay, development and packaging. Okay, fine.
The name I could give you was John.
How do you spell that?
Yeah. He's in packaging as well.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so either one of these men should be able to help you out.
Okay, fine. So I'll give that number a call, I guess, Monday morning.
Yes.
All right, thanks for your help.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Manhattan, I'm looking for a main number for the Coca-Cola company. Thank you very much.
Have a nice day.
Bye-bye.
Good afternoon, Coca-Cola.
Hi. I'm looking for somebody in commercial development and packaging.
Oh, you want the bottling company.
Okay, how can I get a hold of them?
Well, their office would be 914.
Are they in now?
Well, I would imagine so. That's a Westchester number.
Okay.
914.
All right. Which office is that?
That's the bottling company.
And what do they do? They're in charge of packaging and...
Please hold up.
Okay. Bum, bum, bum.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
What do they handle precisely?
Well, there's the Coca-Cola, they have a branch of the Coca-Cola company there, and they also take care of the soda.
Uh-huh. Are they in charge of the labeling of the bottles and cans?
That I don't know. Well, I tell you what you could do. You could call the plant, which is in New York.
Okay.
Bottling plant. That's Skissy Hips.
Uh-huh.
Skissy Hips.
Okay. All right, fine. I'll get a hold of them then.
All righty.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good afternoon,
Hi. Yeah, I'm looking for somebody who would be in charge of packaging, as far as labeling bottles and cans.
As far as what?
I'm looking for someone, the department that's in charge of labeling bottles and cans.
You mean like the production department?
Yeah, I guess that would be it.
Well, this isn't production.
What do I have here?
This is master branch. This is like the office part. You have to call production.
All right. So what I'm looking for is the office that's actually in charge of making a conversion from ounces to milliliters.
Yeah, that's like laboratory quality control.
Oh.
Yeah, you'd have to call production.
Okay, what number would that be?
Here.
All right. Okay, that's production.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
And the next week we're going to continue this exciting series, and we'll find out exactly what's going on. Right now, some music here from Linton Kwesi Johnson.
Forces of victory and the coming right through. Where the forces of victory know what they gonna do. They make a little beat in 1978, and they fight and they fight and they beat the field. And all are we just powered up to nothing little beat. And all are we just powered up to nothing little beat. Where the forces of victory and the coming right through. Where the forces of victory know what they gonna do. Dressed in the red and the feeling of red. Dressed in the green and the feeling of need. Dressed in the purple and the dressed in the yellow. Dressed in the blue and the coming right through. Where the forces of victory and the coming right through. Where the forces of victory know what you're gonna do. We're coming with your army, the danger gets the army. We're coming with your fear, it's gonna drive you in the sea. We're coming with your guns, and we're making it.
The number you have reached,
2467901,
is a working number. Please try your call again, and again, and again, and again, and
commercial style. Don't make a jump and play like a child. So you little girl, stop running wild. I want to hear you laugh and I want to see you smile. God is that one, yeah, this is a cool girl, styling. And I need that one, yeah, this is a nice, nice styling. God, I need that one, yeah, this is a dance hall, styling. From my middle, this is a African styling. Go make we're up in the dope place, styling. And I need that one, yeah, this is a earthquake, styling. Mama, this is a rude boy, styling. I go make it, this is a rude boy, styling. From my middle, this is a African
Give us a call, 246-7901.
Come on, my brother, let me dump it in. Silent.
Rooster Farai, and all that stuff. The exciting adventures of the Tripod family coming up shortly.
Worship, worship,
Fabulous adventures of the Tripod family will be coming up in a very, very short moment. Hey, we don't have time to listen to this song. No.
Nice song, though.
Yeah, it is a nice song.
Very nice song. I like it.
I tell you what, I'm just going to leave it, stop right at this spot here.
Okay.
And right after the Tripod family, we'll pick it up from exactly that point where it is now.
You mean the Tripods barged their way in here and interrupted that nice song?
That's true, and they're probably going to interrupt this rap as well.
Well, how? I mean, you know, shouldn't somebody do something about that?
Radio Free Long Island, with half-hearted support from the Three Village Tobacco Forums, proudly presents another episode of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. Last week, as we left the Tripods, Pop had just marched off to war in the southeast. And as we join the Tripods today, Kathy and Howard are discussing what has just happened. There's a new southeast war? And Pop's on his way down there?
Oh, don't worry about him, Howard. He'll be okay.
No, he won't. Kathy, this isn't like taking a trip to the corner drugstore. This is a war.
Corner? What corner drugstore? We don't have a drugstore on our corner.
You know what I mean.
All we have is a lamppost and a sewer. And a couple of trees on the Henderson's lawn.
Will you please stop quibbling, Kathy? And I'm really worried about this. Pop's never been to the southeast before. And he's never been in a war, either.
I thought he was in one of those world wars.
No, he got sick both times. He's always been furious about that. And he's been trying to make up for it ever since.
Did he try to go to Korea?
Well, he would have, but nobody bothered to tell him about it. He thought it was just a border clash. He didn't know we were sending in troops.
Gee, that's too bad. And there's so many wars, too.
I know. He only wanted to get involved in one. You know, so that he could have something to talk about to his grandchildren.
But we don't have any children.
That's something else, Kathy. Let's stick to one subject.
Well, there were so many other wars he could have gotten involved in. Well, what about Vietnam?
Well, he was on a waiting list. But we had to change our telephone number because we were receiving obscene or harassing telephone calls. And, of course, we forgot to tell the Army, so they never called when Pop's turn came up.
Boy, what a shame. Did he ever think of doing mercenary work?
Well, he did, but... Wait, is that somebody at the door?
Ooh.
Yes, there is somebody there. Sometimes I lose track of what's going on when I get into these discussions, Howard.
I'll get it. Oh, hello, Victor.
Hi, Victor.
Hi, Howard. Hi, Kathy. How have you two been?
Oh, pretty good, I guess.
Considering all the mind-boggling things that have been happening to us.
As always, you know, Victor.
Yes, I suppose. There's been a lot more to talk about since you folks moved into the neighborhood. Like right now, for instance.
What?
You see that crowd outside in the street?
What crowd? Howard, look!
Well, there must be over 100 people outside our house.
Oh, I wonder what they're doing out there.
They're listening to your telephone.
Oh, what?
Your telephone. It's been ringing for a good 4.5 hours now. The neighborhood record is 5 hours. So in another 30 minutes, we'll have a new record.
Has our phone been ringing, Howard?
I don't know. Wait a minute. Yes, I do hear a phone. Things have been so crazy, I guess we just didn't notice it.
Well, you know, if something goes on for a long enough time, you begin not to notice
it. Yeah, I remember back in Big Bear City, we had that leaky faucet. It drove us crazy when it started. But after 6 to 8 weeks, we didn't even notice it.
Hmm, and then Solomon the plumber fixed it, and we couldn't figure out what was missing.
We had a loud clock in our kitchen, but now we don't hear it anymore.
You probably grew accustomed to it.
No, I think we lost it. Because I haven't seen it either for 6 months.
Oh, gee, that's too bad.
Hey, does anybody remember what it was we were talking about?
And so the tripods talk of war, faucets, and telephones as Pop heads off to war in the southeast. What will become of him? And will the tripods break the neighborhood record? You want to be with us next time when we'll hear Victor say,
10 minutes and counting!
That's next time on The Exciting Adventures of the Tripod Family, a co-presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
Billy Novick and Guy Van Duzer, and we'll just let that album play out till the end of the scratches.
You love scratches, don't you? Oh, those are good ones.
Yeah, it's fun to do every once in a while.
I think so. That's good music to listen to on a rainy Friday night, Saturday morning.
It certainly is.
And you know, I was in the record library before, and I heard this great kaboom, and I said, oh boy.
What's Mike up to?
No, I said, it's thunder. We're finally getting a thunderstorm.
Uh-huh.
But it was Frank down the hall moving file cabinets.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Unfortunately. But maybe some thunder will come. Maybe, you know, we'll read the weather forecast in a few seconds and you'll know.
Okay. Well, taking a look at the USB news, it's 1:57 and time now for the 1:55 news. 15 degrees, 59 Fahrenheit, and it's pouring rain here in Stony Brook, or it was before.
Coming down.
President Reagan and six other leaders of industrialized nations will take up tough economic problems at a summit near Paris Saturday. The talks will center on the problems of high inflation rates and the nation's recession-plagued economies. After they arrived at Versailles Friday, the seven leaders put their country's troubles aside for the night. They dined together on creamed sole and spiced beef and took time out to stroll through the Versailles Palace Gardens. Scotland Yard reportedly thinks it's uncovered a terrorist group as a result of its investigation into the shooting of Israel's ambassador to Britain. The British Broadcasting Corporation says the investigation may have forestalled other terrorist activities as a result. A London newspaper says, well, if you want to be correct about it, it's actually the Daily Telegraph. Anyway, they say raids by detectives have led to the discovery of a hit list of leading Israelis targeted for attack. Israeli Ambassador Shlomo Argav, is that how you pronounce his name?
I am not reading it. You are.
Shlomo Argav remains hospitalized in critical condition. He was shot in the head Thursday night. Israel retaliated for the shooting of the Israeli diplomat by bombing Palestinian guerrilla strongholds in Lebanon Friday. The PLO, however, denied any involvement in the shooting. Argentina's military command says its warplanes carried out intensive bombing of British positions near the Falklands capital of Stanley Friday. The Buenos Aires communique claims the British offered no opposition as the Argentines crossed British lines to conduct reconnaissance missions. On the diplomatic front, both the U.S. and Britain vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in the South Atlantic. But later, U.S. Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick says that she should have abstained. Kirkpatrick said instructions for her to do that arrived after Friday's vote was taken.
Well, Health and Human Services Secretary Richard Schweiker is warning parents against using aspirin to treat children suffering from influenza, chickenpox, or other viruses. The reason, Schweiker says, the drug has been associated with Reye's syndrome, a sometimes fatal illness characterized by lethargy and vomiting. But a spokesman for the maker of Bayer aspirin says there's no scientific evidence linking aspirin with Reye's syndrome. While the prospects for ratification of the proposed Equal Rights Amendment by June 30th looked bleaker Friday after the North Carolina Senate voted to table the measure, three more states must ratify the ERA if it's to become law. Lawmakers in Florida will get another chance to vote on entering a special session that begins June 21st. Supporters of the ERA are also trying to push the amendment through in Oklahoma and Illinois. Alberta, once a hurricane, then a tropical storm, has now been downgraded to a tropical depression. The storm remains stalled in the Gulf of Mexico, almost 200 miles southwest of Florida, and forecasters don't expect it to move very much on Saturday. It's blamed for 15 deaths in Cuba. Mike?
A federal judge has denied a request made by the New York Civil Liberties Union to have government officials speed up processing of visa applications for foreigners who want to attend a United Nations disarmament session that begins Monday. The request made by civil liberties attorney Stephen Shapiro was rejected by U.S. District Judge Pierre Lavelle after a hearing. The motion was made in connection with a suit filed Thursday claiming government officials were illegally refusing to grant visas to delegates to the disarmament session. The suit claimed that visas are being denied because many of the applicants are members of the World Peace Council and Gensuko, two Japanese organizations which are said to have communist affiliations. Although the McCarran-Walter Act bars the granting of entry visas to advocates of world communism or organizations affiliated with such advocates, waivers are usually routinely granted by the Attorney General in most cases. In filing its suit, the NYCLU said this mass exclusion affecting hundreds of delegates from the only nation ever ravaged by atomic weapons suggests that the government's real goal is to stifle debate on the issue of nuclear disarmament. Shapiro acknowledged at the hearing that in the past 24 hours, visas have been granted to 170 of the 438 Japanese applicants, and an additional 50 were granted to members of the World Peace Council. But he claimed there are still about 268 Japanese and 70 to 80 non-Japanese applicants who would be deprived of attending the disarmament sessions unless the processing is expedited. Assistant U.S. Attorney Thomas Bellote told Judge LaValle that none of those who received official invitations have been denied visas. Bellote said that 347 remaining applications are being processed, and extra personnel will be working over the weekend in efforts to have all the processing, except 29 applications filed late Thursday, completed by Monday. In denying the request, LaValle says he was satisfied that the government officials were acting speedily, but asked Bellote to inform Shapiro and the court on Monday that they're on their progress before another hearing was scheduled.
If a nuclear war began on a weekday in June 1985, it would kill at least 750 million people immediately. That's almost 20% of the entire world population. And that's according to a study published by the Royal Swedish Academy of Scientists. The two-year study by 22 scientists in the United States, Soviet Union, and Eastern and Western Europe concluded that another 340 million people would be seriously injured, and many of them would die in the absence of medical treatment. A news conference to announce the study was one of several events yesterday leading to the United Nations special session on disarmament, which begins Monday. An anti-nuclear demonstration the following weekend is expected to draw at least 500,000 protesters. The scientists in the Swedish study based their opinions on a scenario, fewer than half the weapons in the arsenals of the United States and Soviet Union. That was using that data. Nuclear physicist Frank Barnaby, a consultant to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, said there was a feeling in dealing with the subject that conservatism was necessary for credibility. Barnaby said a nuclear war would affect the climate by causing fires over about 1 million square kilometers of the sky with particles that would block out the sun maybe for months. He noted this would curtail agricultural production and cause widespread starvation. The study also found that a limited nuclear exchange against East and West German targets described as purely military would result in the immediate death of 1 million to 10 million civilians. In another anti-nuclear event today, survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki related their experiences at a forum entitled The Nuclear Threat: What Women Can Do. The Westchester People's Coalition was greeting more than 100 walkers from religious groups and other organizations in Montreal and Bangor, Maine, as they passed through White Plains. The walkers, who included Buddhist monks, will arrive in New York City on Sunday, according to Deborah Wilbur, a coalition spokeswoman. And a two-day international symposium on morality and legality of nuclear weapons ends today, that's Saturday, at the United Engineering Center in Manhattan. Lawyers and members of the clergy are participating in the panel discussions.
Well, it's not exactly a border war yet, but some people who live in Stamford, Connecticut, would like to move the city limits so they can become residents of neighboring Greenwich instead. There are about 103 families who live in a little corner of Stamford, known as Dolphin's Cove. Their leaders say they are tired of high taxes and the lack of community services. Spokesman George Skinner has written Greenwich officials saying Dolphin Cove residents want to live in Greenwich. Greenwich has lower property taxes than Stamford. He says most of the waterfront community's residents shop in Greenwich and are more aligned with Greenwich's town government than Stamford's city government. The town communities are in extreme southwestern Connecticut on the Long Island Sound shore, not too far from New York City. Greenwich First Selectman Rebecca Breed says she can understand why people would want to live in such a great town as hers,
but calls the problem of Dolphin Cove a low priority. At Stanford City Hall, mayoral aide Barbara Foreman said she never heard of the succession move before. In Greenwich, assistant town attorney James McCauley says the whole business is silly because the legislator would have to vote to move the municipal boundaries.
USB Long Island weather calls for cloudy conditions throughout the night with a chance of occasional light rain or drizzle. It'll be cool with lows in the upper 50s, and tomorrow rainy, windy, cool with rain, heavy at times. Might turn my volume down, please. That's not nice. With rain heavy at times late in the day, highs in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, rain heavy at times, windy and cool with lows in the upper 50s. And on Sunday, we're expecting rain to end in the morning. Mike, what's the USB Long Island temperature right now?
The USB Long Island temperature is 15. That's 59 Fahrenheit.
Okay.
Okay, well now, this is a selection of yours.
Well, wait a minute, your tune, too.
WUSB, Stony Brook.
Thank you, Frank.
Make things legal.
Mm.
Yes, it's time now for our 2 o'clock album side at, what, 7 minutes after two?
Hey, that's not too bad.
Yeah, and we picked an album.
Hey, that's Maine, right? 207? The area code
for Maine? The area code for Maine, I believe, is 207.
Yeah.
Or is that Idaho? It might be Idaho.
I think you're thinking of 204, no? Well, in any event, it's 208.
Uh-oh. I don't know what that is. Maybe
we have the same discussion week in and week out.
Yeah, but it always stops when it gets to 210.
Well, why?
Because there are no area codes with 210. And, well, at 211 we talk about credit for a little while.
And 212 we could talk about New York City for
okay,
a whole
then it starts over again.
Yeah.
But 210 is not an area code.
And 213 would be L.A., right?
Yeah.
214 would be a part of Texas.
Okay, all right, enough of this.
215 is Philadelphia.
It's 208 now. Time for our
216 is in there.
We're way
overdue.
Ohio,
right?
We're way overdue, Mike, for our 2 o'clock album side.
Oh, yeah. We certainly are. Well, what is it?
It's a regular part of the Voice of Long Island. We do it every week.
We certainly do.
We welcome your suggestions and comments on the album sides. Today, we have an album by a gentleman called Jim Carroll.
And his band.
Yeah. Now, this is his first album. We'll be hearing side two of that album, and as a special treat to you listeners, we'll be offering a pair of tickets. That's right, a pair of tickets to see Jim Carroll at the North Stage Theater this Sunday night. It's in Glen Cove, and if you want to win tickets, well, you'll just be the first caller, 246-7901.
And here's our album side.
Side two.
Thank you. vomit on the floor. Promises, just one promise more. Cause when the city drops into the night, he pulls it off and says, one moment of light. Then everything seems clear. The other side, it seems familiar. What if things are wrong? I think it's gonna be just about right. Before the city drops, the city drops, the city drops, the city drops into the night. Twin Titties ghost is on the roof, beating his drum. And Teddy's best friend is two blocks east, and he's making Teddy's ex-girlfriend come. They mistook Teddy's good trust just to prove that Teddy was dumb. But listen, you know, I think that they are both just dumb. Cause when the city drops into the night, before the darkness there's one moment of light. That's when everything seems clear. The other side, it seems so near. What seems wrong? I think it's gonna be right. Before the city drops, it drops, it goes down into the night.
And they're all gonna try to make the wind from you. hard to be a cashier in a bookstore. Hey, to be surrounded by a history of your true love. And you get naked between two shelves in the back room. And have to bring your chair by... When he took you off, you let him steal all the fame. So I think it's time that you all start to think about getting by. Without that need to go out and find son, but it's too long.
Determined to serve me well. I made allies in heaven. I made comrades in girl. I was a Catholic child. The blood rain.
Be as long as a minute, he says.
Okay, it was more like 20 seconds. I'm sorry.
It was more like 5 seconds. I'm gonna find another album to.
Well, I was hoping you'd read off the songs that we heard because I didn't.
I'll tell you what. I'll have Frank bring it into you. Would you
bring in the album cover to the? See, we're in different rooms and it makes things kind of difficult. Frank now is walking by and here he is.
WUSB Stony Brook.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you very much. All right, we heard City Drops Into the Night. We heard Crow, It's Too Late, I Want the Angel, and Catholic Boy. Who wrote Dust next to I Want the Angel? That's not funny. Jim Carroll Band.
That's terrible.
Yeah. The album's called Catholic Boy. Frank's throwing ice cubes across the room at me.
Oh!
I just threw one back and I almost hit him. Okay, Jim Carroll Band consists of Brian Lindsley on guitar, Steve Lindsley on bass, Terry Wynn guitar, Wayne Woods on drums, and Jim Carroll on vocals. And congratulations to Man Out in Plainview, who won a pair of Jim Carroll tickets.
Do we have any more?
Not at the moment, but we will be giving away more. So just stay right here on USB FM.
During our show?
Not during our show, no.
Oh, shucks.
Maybe during the Anthony White program. Maybe during the Gordon Healy program tomorrow morning.
What about my program?
Oh, we weren't saying anything. Don't worry.
Oh, okay.
Maybe during Lister.
The Lister Show.
Or the African Beat.
Ooh. No, we can't do that. That's on tape.
That's true.
Yeah.
That comes your way at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Check this out. This came through on the telephone before.
The telephone or the teletype?
Telephone.
Okay.
The number you have reached, 246-7901, is a working number. Please try your call again. And again, and again, and again, and
That's interesting. How'd you get that?
I don't know. I found it here on tape.
You called that up?
Somebody did.
Oh. Well, of course, that number is in service, so call it up.
That is our telephone number, 516-246-7901. And we got some music here.
What do we have?
Something from Phil Manzanera. I love this album.
Yeah?
It's a new album called Primitive Guitars.
Why does it sound backwards?
I'll never tell. This is the voice of Long Island. I'm Mike Uhas.
I'm Eric Corley.
Stick around.
Thank you.
Phil Manzanera there.
A couple of cuts from him.
From his new album called Primitive Guitars, Criollo and Caracas. I'm Mike Uhas.
And I'm Eric Crowley.
And you're on the phone down at the other end of the hall, huh?
Yes, I am.
What are you doing down there, playing with computers or something?
I think so.
It sounds like fun. What are you playing, some kind of galactic game, or are you just hitting a control G or what?
Just making noise.
I see. That sounds interesting. Well, I just wanted to get you involved in this little rap. That's why I called you up long distance, you know.
All right. Yeah, I like it. Sorry about that. Yeah, I like getting involved.
I figured you would, and you know, you still have a slice of moldy pizza left down here.
Do I?
You certainly do.
Well, that's the happiest news I've heard all day.
It's
almost as happy as my two friends.
Your two friends?
Yes. B&S.
Bunky and Spunky.
Yeah.
We have a Bunky and Spunky report for you.
Oh, boy.
Right about now.
Hollywood!
Berlin!
Moscow!
Redwood!
It's all here and it's all true! Well, folks, tonight's Bunky and Spunky report deals with something that has touched both of us personally, though you may find it hard to believe. Celebrities and their criminal records. Now, we've all heard of this celebrity or that being arrested for various violations of the Good Citizenship Code. Drunken driving, tax evasion, consorting with minors, self-abuse, the works. But this report deals with one of the most insidious and bizarre cases on record. Junkie and the Pumpkinheads. Yes, sad to say that 1 year ago today, our pal Junkie and his rock group, the Pumpkinheads, were arrested at a monkeys convention for fooling around with blasting caps. Some say they took a dare from an irate fan. Others say it was a case of temporary insanity. But we know for a fact that he was blinded by the dazzling lure of superstardom and driven to arrogant, irresponsible acts of terrorism, all in the name of kicks. It was too much too soon, and poor Junk didn't have the maturity and judgment to handle it. We think we did him a favor by calling the Coast Guard and turning him in. He's kind of sore at us now, but we know in a year or two he'll thank us for what we did. So let that be a lesson to you all. Don't be seduced from right thinking by the false glitter of money, success, and fame, or you could be next. That's all for now, gang.
That was such good music.
Oh, yeah.
Such an interesting little feature. Bunky and Spunky, they pop in here every now and again.
They certainly do.
So you're still on the phone there, huh?
Yeah, I'm holding it pretty well.
Hello? Hello? You're back again. You kind of put yourself on hold.
What happened? Oh, that does not. I had like an electrical charge. So.
I'm speaking with Eric Corley, I believe, unless he's changed his appearance over the last few minutes or so.
Really? That was quite... Oh, boy.
How are you making those noises?
I don't know. Someone's doing something strange over here.
All right, well, anyway, we got some music here from Steve Tibbetts. So I'm going to say goodbye to you. Thank you. No. That's Junior Dan from an album called KTW Dub. And that's a song called Midnight.
Tasty stuff.
In El Salvador.
Oh, yeah.
Yow. Certainly is. It's good stuff. Well, it's about 2:54. It's pouring rain outside.
Oh, I like rain. I really do.
You said that before.
I know, and I still mean it.
Vermont rain especially, eh?
Vermont rain, but Long Island rain is a lot to be said for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good just knowing that everybody in Long Island is snuggling up to their radios while the rain pours outside.
It certainly is pouring.
Yeah, it is. It's coming down.
At least here in Stony Brook, it's 15 degrees, 59 Fahrenheit.
If you're on the road, please be careful.
Yeah, that sounds kind of trite to say that, but it is true. Watch yourself.
Yeah.
By all means.
We're careful when we're on the road.
We're not careful when we're not on the road.
Oh, no.
That's especially when we're on the air.
That's when we make up for it.
That's for sure.
Especially Friday nights and Saturday mornings and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Say, listen, I have a special promo here that I have to run.
You do?
I certainly
do. Okay.
On Monday, June 7th at 8 p.m., WUSB-FM, in cooperation with Media for Social Responsibility, presents a live public forum on the issue of nuclear armament. This town meeting of the air will feature recorded speeches by Seymour Melman of Columbia University, Richard Garwin of IBM, and Dr. Jonathan Lorch of Physicians for Social Responsibility. A panel of experts, including William Higginbottom from Brookhaven Labs and Alice Daly of the Long Island Nuclear Freeze Campaign, will lead an open discussion on our nuclear strategy and its consequences. Community members are invited to join WUSB in the Union Auditorium on the Stony Brook campus, or to call the panel at 246-7901. All questions and responses will be broadcast live. For more information on Monday's forum, call 246-7900.
Yes, it's a good idea.
It certainly is, and I'll be there. And
I'll bet you will.
Yeah, I'll be listening and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's we forgot to mention before we're wearing the tripods about our special repeat deal during the week.
That's true. It's you can catch up on some old editions of the Tripod family, which are heard Tuesday and Thursdays around 10:15 p.m. right here on WUSB 90.1 FM
in Stony Brook.
Yeah. Now, you do your program on Tuesdays, and I do mine on Thursdays. And we're catching up. We started the old ones. We started re-repeating the old ones. No, not re-repeating.
Repeating. Just we haven't started re-repeating yet, but I guess that day will come soon.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. The acting's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, I think so, too.
We should give credit to that production company, whoever they may be.
Well, they come from Big Bear City, and where they're going, no one knows. Where they came from, no one knows.
That's for sure, too. Where did we come from, anyway?
No one
knows.
Well, I grew up in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Not Kingston style-y.
No, that's in Rhode Island. I know somebody who works at the radio station in Kingston, Rhode Island.
You, really?
Yeah.
So do I.
How about that?
And they don't even have a reggae program.
But they
there.
Play reggae. That's just it. They try to play reggae.
Oh, they do try to play.
Yeah.
That's good.
Oh, yes.
That's good to hear. Well, I'm Mike Uhas, and
I'm Eric Corley, and we'll continue to be after we get off the air, but we'll be back again next week.
We welcome your phone calls, even if we're not on the air.
Yeah, you can leave a message for us, even if we're not here.
At 516-246-7901 on a Friday night.
Saturday morning.
Good night. You're tuned to WUSB.
Stony Brook. Until next week.
Bye.
By 10:30, out with mates and dates and friends. That's what I do at weekends. I can't talk and I can't walk, but I know where I'm going to go. I'm going to watch my money go. At the local, no. When my feet go through the door, I know what my right arm is.
This is Long Island's non-commercial alternative at 90.1 FM in stereo, WUSB, Stony Brook.
Minutes now past 3 o'clock here at 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook. Thank you very much, Mike Uhas and Eric Corley, for that sensational show, Voice of Long Island. They're just doing zany things all over. My name is Tony White, and I've got good music for you, so I hope you're still enjoying it. It's raining outside, quite bad, heavy at times, and it'll be that way for the duration of the period. But continue to tune in here at 90.1. I've got good music for you. One of the talented, many talented Laws, Miss Eloise Laws. You're incredible, my friend. 2467901 tells you how much incredible you are.